Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Podcast starts now. Wow, 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 wow. The way that we are not only a bi-coastal podcast now, we are actually tri-coastal.
Tri-coastal, international, global.
We've gone global 100%.
Yeah, the song International Smile by Katy Perry is applicable here, I would say.
It's never been more applicable in our lives, which is saying something because both of us have traveled before.
That's right. Multiple times even. You know, speaking of songs that exist, today's a huge day, Sam. Do you want to say why?
Are you really deciding right now to hop into the Taylor Swift discourse?
Well, you know, we've always been a proudly, we were the pioneers in starting a movement of being neutral about Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. And I think for a while, I think I was satisfied being like, it is the biggest political statement you can make is never address when her music comes out, never address anything about her, never, you know, and I think silence sometimes is actually more politically impactful than using your voice. And that's something they won't tell you at various, you know, Ivy League universities across this great nation.
Yeah.
But I think that somehow today I did feel compelled to speak.
So you're speaking out. You're speaking now, as Taylor Swift would say.
That's right. So here's my thing. I'm trying to find the right words with which to say this. So much of this podcast and so much of like our rapport and our sense of humor is like taking things that are meaningless and silly and vapid and like weaving theories around them and being like, this is why quarter zips are straight and button ups are gay. Like, it, we love talking about things that don't matter. We love something silly, something stupid, something lowbrow even. And so I would never purport to be some sort of pretentious elitist or something like that. Here's what I'm running into a wall with Taylor Swift. I can't even muster up the energy to do that with her.
Like, you can't even be playful with it.
I don't know how to even interact with it in a distanced, ironic way. It's like staring into a black hole.
I'm finding myself crippled with silence in like a non-activism way. I feel like,
Say more.
I feel like I have to be silent in like a, like, it's impossible to, like, your words, I feel like, you know how when a famous person does our podcast,
yeah,
sometimes they'll take something random and be like, and it'll make a headline, like blank says blank. And you're like, well, you made news out of a comedy podcast? This makes no sense. And I feel like any conversation, a private conversation I will have about Taylor Swift could be taken out of context and made news because everyone is just looking for like, who hates her? Who loves her? What's the deal? And I'm like, Everyone stop it. I mean, this is the neutrality issue again, but I feel like you can't remain on a day like today. I feel like all I can do is like run into the woods and hide.
Yeah. That's very folklore of you, I imagine. I have not listened to the album.
I mean, again, I'm so happy for all of her fans. They are
Me too.
The most well-fed fans in all of pop music. And that is really amazing. You know, as someone who stands Gaga, of course, I'm alive, but barely. Yeah. I get a morsel here and there. But,
you're emaciated.
And I tell myself... I'm emaciated. I'm ready to walk the runways of Milan based on how emaciated I am, for crying out loud.
Right. my friend was saying that they are like, you know that Kamala thing? Sorry, we can't be talking about online stuff, but you know that Kamala video where she's like...
My favorite video of all time.
My mother used to, she would give us a hard time sometimes and she would say to us, I don't know what's wrong with you young people. You think you just fell out of a coconut tree? You exist in the context of all in which you live and what came before you.
You didn't fall out of a coconut tree. You live in the context of everything around you or whatever. My friend was like, you know, Taylor Swift fans are really the most fell out of a coconut tree fan base around. And I do think that there's something sort of beautiful about that and sort of pure. Like you do, they seem to exist in this childlike state where no music or art has come before or after Taylor Swift. And I was thinking, like, in the same way that you and I wake up every morning, read the news, maybe we read some culture news or political news, or maybe we catch up on what's going on in the arts. And then we have some opinions about it. I think these people only read, they have an app that only shows them what Taylor Swift is doing. And then they have, and then that's like what the topic of conversation is that day.
I don't know what to make of it, to be honest. So, like, yeah. Even this, I'm like, it's so easy to be like, all Taylor Swift fans are completely ignorant of past, present, and future.
Sure.
But then it's like, but that's not true. Like, there's something even deeper. There's something even more nefarious going on, because they do know what's going on. Like, some of these people are smart. Some of them, like, and it's like, what the hell is happening here? And I don't know. And there's a way, you know, when... Like, I almost wish, like, to be left out of this feeling. It doesn't give me the feeling of eliteness that I would prefer it to give me. It actually just gives me a feeling of lost. I feel like, it's almost like, am I missing out on a human experience? Is liking Taylor Swift a human experience that I am incapable of experiencing? And I don't know.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. It's sort of like when an election is happening and you see people earnestly, like, feel truly like a strong connection to Joe Biden or something. You know, I mean, I guess there are no debates this year because who needs them? But, you know, in a normal election, there's debates. And it's like seeing someone who is earnestly like, our guy's going to win. You know, really like team blue. And then, and they're like against team red. And they're so excited about it in a real earnest way. And they're so like, oh, that's going to make a difference. And you're like, God, if only I could occupy that sort of spirit, I would be so much happier on a day-to-day basis.
I'd be so much happier. I know that, like, I don't do like a lot of work to try to educate myself. If I'm being
about what?
Like, I, for all intents and purposes, I should be someone who likes Taylor Swift. I should be someone that is team blue over team red. I like, you know, I've been on the last 60 pages of a book that everyone read 7 years ago for 6 months. I should be like this person. And like, I'm not trying to open my eyes. I'm like trying to shut them. And yet I see through it.
I see what you're saying. You're saying it's not even like you are some urbanite sophisticate that is always shitting on things that are popular and does not believe in popular art and only goes to the opera. You're saying you want so badly to participate in it, and you are in fact actively trying to read less. Yeah.
Yes. This is like being gay all over again, where it's like, this shouldn't be me.
Yeah.
I'm just a boy from the Midwest.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It, being gay was forced upon you against your will, and now being sort of smart has been forced upon you against your will, despite all your efforts. You're like, stop it, stop it. You're banging your head against the wall repeatedly. You're trying to say, stop having critical thoughts, but it's impossible.
It's impossible. That's literally it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. You know, you know what I think would help us with this discussion?
Bringing in our guest?
Bringing in a cultural critic to give her take.
I'll say, George, do the honors.
Oh my God. We are so excited to welcome to the pod. I have to say, we are a little late to this. I'm like, the book came out like over a month ago, but we are so excited to have author of No Judgment and also Fake Accounts, which is a novel I loved, Lauren Euler on the podcast. Hello, Lauren, and welcome.
Hi. I have a thought, actually. I thank you for bringing me in because I was like, I was raring to go. I was like, I have some analysis.
Yeah. Well, you know, Lauren, as someone who sort of has made a career out of tearing down powerful women, I would love to hear your opinion on one Miss Taylor Swift.
Well, I think Sam's issue, your feeling of alienation about not understanding what it's like to like Taylor Swift, they don't understand what it's like to not care about Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. right? And that's also a rich, beautiful experience that you're having, an aesthetic experience even, where, you know, you're making an effort, you're listening to it. It doesn't mean anything to you. That's also an experience that you're having. And I think that that's very valid. And you shouldn't be ashamed of it. You shouldn't say anything bad about Taylor Swift, because my understanding is they will get you. But besides that, I think that that's totally fine. But do you think that she in some way produces the experience of believing that she is like, she fell out of a coconut, you all fell out of a coconut tree. This is all like the present moment. There is no,
yes.
There's no predecessor and there's no future as well. Right. Like that's part of the appeal,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like hedonistic enjoyment. It's just kind of, high school emotional drama, right?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, is that I think in order to really fully buy into the narrative, you just have to... I mean, she is in this constant state of like high school big feelings, which I think there's something sort of beautiful about. I mean, I don't know, it's much less interesting to release an album that's about like, well, I woke up and I was sort of hungover and then I read half an article and then went on a walk. Like, it is obviously like much more interesting to be constantly falling in love and constantly having your heart broken. But then you also are stuck in this place where all these things feel like they're happening for the first time.
Yeah, and also that they're never going to end, right? Like,
yeah.
There's no future and there's no past. But I think people sort of want to live in that place. And indeed, actually, I do think that they do. I do think that there are some people who are unbothered by the philosophical issues of existence, and they're just kind of like bopping around. And so the worst,
yeah.
you know, the worst thing that happens to them, and it's actually not a, it's not so, I'm not being, I sound terrible, but it's not like the worst kind of person to be like, I was in love with this guy and he ditched me for someone more beautiful. It's mm-hmm. not, it does suck. Like, it's a really sort of moving experience. And if you have no, like, you know, context, right? The context of what
yeah, it's even more moving.
Yeah, it's even more moving. but what's amazing is that people don't sort of have any epiphanies after that, right? Like, they just keep doing
yes.
the same thing over and over. Like, it doesn't make them stronger.
Mm-hmm. There's no connecting of the dots. There are just dots constantly.
There's no Kelly Clarkson.
There's no Kelly Clarkson. That's Kelly Clarkson, right? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. There's none of that.
Yes, exactly.
There's just,
yes.
there's no Kelly Clarkson. American Idol never happened.
I feel this way. I also sometimes feel this way about comedians
yeah.
when comedians like keep finding themselves in fucked up situations and like storytelling about the fucked up situation that they got themselves into. I'm sort of like, well, when are you going to learn to not get into fucked up situations? Like, at some point you're seeking out fucked up situations and being dishonest with either me, your audience, or you yourself. And I can't tell who you're being dishonest to, but there is a dishonesty going on here.
I mean, if there's someone who fell out of a coconut tree, it's stand-up comedians.
But you guys are comedians. But what would happen if you stopped getting into fucked up? I guess you comment on external
yes.
stimuli, right? So you don't need to get in a fucked up situation. But I recently sort of developed an appreciation for, let's say, lived experience. And I'm like, yeah, a little bit of a fucked up situation is okay. And as long as I conduct myself, as long as I win the fucked up situation, like, I'll go, you know, I'm interested in that.
Do you feel comfortable telling us what the fucked up situation was that you're referring to?
It's just getting into scrapes, romantic scrapes,
oh,
personal scrapes, drama. I think this relates to what we're going to talk about later, so I don't want to give too much
okay,
away.
Okay, okay, well, we won't get into
my,
it
like,
now.
It's like love life, social life. Like,
okay.
Sure. I mean, look, I'm not above getting myself into a fucked up situation, but I think I am sort of, you know, I don't like when it feels forced. I say, let it happen naturally. You know, you can find, you know, even the most normal situation has interesting elements if you let it. It's sort of my take on it, but you know, maybe that's not true. Maybe I should join a cult for a year and then I'll have a big comedy book.
We're not talking about cults. We're not talking about cults. We're just talking about guys you're going out with that you
sure.
You know it's going to end badly. Like that's like, there's a dispiriting like idea that, you know, you should avoid the red flags and you should be actualizing and you should live your life in a particular way. And I don't seek out things, but if they come to you and then you accept them, that's sort of different.
Well, yeah. And it's also like, what are you going to do? Not ever seek out big feelings and not even always be completely like down the line and neutral and never have any big. I mean, you're not even going to get close to the epiphanies if you don't at least attempt some things.
And then you're going to get older and you're going to have many regrets.
Yes, that's very true.
You're going to be reflecting constantly on all of the things you could have done and all the loves you lost. And what if you had just gone? What if you had just gone to the bar? Like when you had said you were, you know, okay, what if you just had the
affair? It's true.
You're literally convincing me to be Taylor Swift coded.
I'm literally all in on Taylor Swift now. I'm not even kidding. There is something.
This is not about Taylor Swift. This is about.
Yeah.
This
no,
is,
I know.
No, it's about, all about it's Taylor about... Swift.
I wonder if, you know what, I think it is also about Taylor Swift. And I have to be honest with myself and call myself in because I feel like there's almost something. Taylor Swift is unable to have any sort of ironic distance and is unable to have like a sense of humor about herself, really. And I think my distaste for it comes down to that. But maybe that is on me because I don't have the courage to like enter this fully earnest milieu. And it's like that's because of I have some sort of self like insurmountable self, I don't know, shame or self-awareness or something.
But do you think that she had, it's not ironic, but certainly you have to have distance if you're sort of cultivating a public image, right? She just, I mean, everybody has a persona. She surely has, her persona is that. It's sure. Just like we find it sort of annoying and boring.
I guess that's true.
But maybe she's not annoying and boring. She could just be really good at doing that. Mm-hmm. But usually my feeling about celebrities, like really, truly famous people, is that they're all like quite with it, if not intelligent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I do think especially these days, it is so genuinely difficult and traumatizing to have any level of fame that if you are getting through that on a day-to-day basis, you must have a good head on your shoulders in some capacity.
Or you have been, your good head is like war, you know, I'm sure she's crazy in some way, like,
yeah.
because of that, but she can handle it, right?
The
ability to handle it doesn't necessarily indicate a good head.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But I mean, also maybe she's abnormal, but that doesn't mean that she's a psycho.
Sure.
Huh. Okay, I have two. What would happen if you did hang out with Taylor Swift and you were like, oh my God, she's actually incredible. I'm such an asshole. How would that feel?
It would be great because then I would get to go whatever, sit in the box of whatever fucking sports thing she's gone to for some reason, like dance around with Cara Delevingne and like,
everyone's,
you know, whatever.
My childhood dream.
Get some free clothes. I think we're probably similar sizes because she's also a tall woman.
Oh.
So I think that's
true.
Great. If I genuinely liked her.
Yeah. I don't think it is beyond the realm of possibility that Taylor, I mean, all these people have sort of a team that picks what books they are photographed with and what taste they have and whatever. I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility for them to decide, you know, we want Lauren Euler to be part of Taylor's squad for the next album cycle. She's sort of like going in a more bookish direction. I do agree with you that I have never met you in person, but I know you're saying you're tall. I know Taylor's like, you guys would probably look good together in a photograph, like the two of you hanging out.
Laughing,
it would be sort of like
the restaurant.
Laughing. Yeah. Like you with Blake Lively, with Cara Delevingne.
There's something.
I don't know.
To it.
Could be something.
I don't know.
Wow. I mean, that would be so groundbreaking. That would be sort of her growing up.
Also, isn't the sort of idea that she had this brief relationship with that guy from whatever that band is,
Maddie Healy.
And he helped her produce, as far as I know, her one kind of interesting song, which is about being the anti-hero or whatever. I think that song's
great song.
The persona that she is speaking from is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe she's wants to go a little dark, come hang out in Berlin. I believe she did her tour and she did not come to Berlin.
Wow.
That could be wrong. Don't quote me on that, but I believe she went to Munich and
I was about to say. Yep.
I believe she did not stop here because she maybe would not have been welcome. I'm sure they could have scrounged up some people to see her, but
yeah. You know, my sister lives in Munich and it is really just sort of like the more basic Berlin, like it is everyone, they take everyone from Berlin and they're like, take off one eyebrow piercing and put on this startup t-shirt and you can go to Munich.
And, but they're glowing, like they're really creepy,
yes,
right?
It's
they,
true.
They're really, really tan, really glowing. They're always like hanging out by the river, that whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're very rich.
Well, I'll say this and we can close the book on Taylor Swift, yeah. But I started out this whole episode being like, my issue with Taylor Swift is that I can't even theorize around her. And here we are, you know, 10, 15 minutes into the episode, and we have thought of some amazing points. We have, you know, sort of like, I think, brought into the fore some interesting elements of her work. And I think after this, I'm going to listen to the album top to bottom, and I'm going to publish my official rankings of the songs on BuzzFeed.com. So look out for that.
Yeah, I think we did a really, really balanced discussion. And
yeah.
I think if anyone were to attack us after this, well, we would have grounds to put them in prison.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And again, as I always say, I like the album Reputation. So if anyone wants to come for me, just know that.
Yeah.
That I often listen to the song Delicate.
Yeah. And
I don't even know that song.
It's really good. You'd like
highly
it.
Highly recommend.
And for some reason,
it's really good.
The song Mean speaks to me.
Oh, yeah.
Mean
is great.
Know why.
Yeah, that's a great song.
It's such a hit. So, you know, this has been a really, really balanced discussion. And I think we deserve money for that, actually.
Yeah. And shout out to the Tortured Poets Department. That's what it's called.
Yeah. Yeah.
The most, truly. If I were like, what is the most grating series of three words you could put together? It would be Tortured Poets Department.
Well, and it's apparently what her ex's with the group text thread was called. So it's a call.
That
do we know
so...
that, or is that a theory? Who said that?
I don't know. Someone was telling me this last night. I did a show and I found myself, everyone there was a huge Taylor Swift fan. And I was sort of just like, it was that thing where I was like, oh, I'm like, I found myself in enemy territory. And like,
yeah.
If I say a word, I'll be drawn and quartered. So I need to be silent.
You know where I was? I was in Washington, D.C. And I was on a little book tour and I was in mostly coastal elite cities or Chicago, the great American city. But then I was ending in Washington, D.C. and everywhere you went was Taylor Swift. It was also not from any one album. It was like obviously a Taylor Swift Spotify radio or even worse, I would assume someone's personal My Favorite Taylor Swift tracks just nonstop every restaurant. Everywhere you were.
DC is actually, I would say, what the city Taylor Swift was made for.
Yes.
Wow.
And I mean,
she's
do you not agree?
She's from Pennsylvania, no?
She's from Pennsylvania.
Rural Pennsylvania, not that far away from where I'm from, if I may.
Oh. Another reason why you guys would hit it off.
We would hit it off.
No, DC is a perfect encapsulation of her. I think.
Yeah. So when Sam and I went on tour, you know, we went to a few cities and our audience, you know, it's like a sort of mix of, I don't know, sort of like queer and queer presenting people in their like 20s through 40s. Okay. And it's like, you see some tattoos, you see some piercings, you see some people that are sort of like, you know, work in marketing, but are ashamed of it. And, you know, they love listening to comedy podcasts, whatever. In DC, every single person was like in a suit coming from working in the White House. I've never seen anything like it. Like the most like respectful, you know, applause, laughing exactly three ha ha ha's per joke and then completely like composing themselves.
Well, to be fair, our show that night was at the U.S. House of Representatives, so
true. Yeah. And Joe Biden was in attendance.
Wait. I'm trying to formulate the joke. What about the Senate guy? The twink.
That was that bottomed in the
Senate twink. Yeah.
Right. Well, see, he's the only person.
You know the joke I'm making.
That's the only person that has ever lived out loud in the city of Washington, D.C. And look how he was ostracized.
Not okay.
I love my favorite joke setup is I'm trying to formulate the joke.
That's literally 70% of my life. Okay, should we do our first segment, Sam? What do you think?
I think that would be such a beautiful idea, George.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We are both dealing with such different issues in our day-to-day lives. You have a full-time job in Los Angeles. You've had to uproot your home. You have to figure out work-life balance. Meanwhile, I am a freelancer in New York City. How do I fit it all in one day? How do I create my own schedule? What am I, some boss lady in a film?
You know, it's so hard. You have to be boss and employee. But you know what? We can't keep these things bottled up. You know, we need to let them out.
That's right. People all carry around different stressors, both big and small. And when you bottle them up, it can start to affect you negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
I'll tell you something. Therapy in the past for me has been just a place where once a week I can tell someone what I'm thinking of in a safe and enclosed space where no one can enter and ask me to send an email, because it is my time and it is my time for therapy. And everyone deserves that in all across this great nation.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and hey, suited for your schedule.
So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Stradio today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Stradio. Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
We like to do a preliminary first segment with every guest called Straight Shooters. And in this segment, we ask you a series of rapid-fire questions to gauge your familiarity with and complicity in straight culture. All you have to do is choose this thing or this other thing. And the one rule is you can't ask any follow-up questions about how the game works. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, Lauren. Manifesting a better life or beta testing women to be your wife?
Manifesting a better life.
Okay, Lauren. Putting a playlist on shuffle or getting your face hit in a kerfuffle?
Oh, shuffle.
Catching a matinee or matching with a man who's gay?
Matching with a man who's gay. Well, no, it's difficult. I would say I do like a matinee as well.
Okay, Lauren, Carrie Bradshaw or Terry Bradshaw?
Carrie.
We tell ourselves stories in order to live, or that new song is boring. I wanted it to give.
That new song is boring. I wanted it to give.
Okay. Full transparency or hair transplant for me?
Full transparency. These are too easy.
Okay.
I listened to your one with the director just now, and you gave her much better.
Oh, Theta. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, you know, you're catching us on a Friday, and it's Taylor Swift Day, so we've been really busy all day.
Sorry, the critics in the hot seat.
Okay. The critic has entered the chat, y'all. Okay. This itch won't go away, or this bitch is good at ballet?
This bitch is good at ballet.
Okay, Toblerone or Hold the Phone?
Hold the Phone.
Wow.
Wow. Okay, so we rank each guest's performance on a scale of 0 to 1,000 doves. I would say, you know, I would say generally I would go in a sort of like 700 to 800 direction, but because of your bold criticism of us, I think that actually elevates you to a 950, a clean 950. What do you think, Sam?
I 100% agree.
We haven't been put in our place like that in a while, and it really actually felt correct.
You know, I actually do have to, I mean, a guest to like really be like, no, this isn't good enough is so refreshing.
It's so good.
I do feel that generally, George, I don't know how you feel. I do feel like we are somewhat in our backlash era.
Are you experiencing backlash?
We are experiencing backlash. Should we talk about the specifics of the backlash, do you think?
I would, actually. I'm not opposed to it.
So, Lauren, we had American comedian Kathy Griffin on the podcast, and she told, you know, listen, I, as a sort of basic gay teen, I loved Kathy Griffin. She was appealing to stupid little gay guys that like pop culture. That was me. I was all in. To me, she's always been a white whale. I've always been like, it would be so fun to have her on the podcast. How funny for the two of us to be talking to Kathy Griffin. So she did the podcast. I thought she was very funny. At some point out of nowhere, she went on a full sort of, I would say, rant about how we need to vote blue no matter who, and that if we don't, then potentially we as gay guys would lose our rights. And the problem there, I think, is twofold. A, you know, the idea of voting blue no matter who, you know, amid everything happening in the world right now, amid Joe Biden sending billions of dollars of military aid to Israel, is a complicated statement, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Second being her sort of implication that as two gay men, the only thing we would care about is like gay marriage being repealed and not, you know, innocent people being murdered.
Yeah. Fair. All fair.
So then we do not know this woman at all. Like, her doing this podcast was like exciting for us because we're like, this is like an icon, Kathy Griffin.
Yes.
And so she goes,
and we respect her.
We respect her. And so we were like, okay, like it was sort of like, let's just try to move on. And people were like,
but why don't you guys edit?
So that's
all the other podcasts edit.
I kind of,
well, I felt
it.
Like it was, so that was Sam's, and sorry, Sam, to, Sam wanted to cut the rant, and I was sort of like, I find it, maybe I have such a like joker sense of humor that to me, it's literally so funny. And I'm sorry to make light of it, but it's so funny to me for the two of us, two gay guys that literally like we literally had an episode where the straight topic was voting. Like we've made jokes about this sort of like vote blue no matter who sentiment before. Everyone knows our politics. Everyone knows our sense of humor. To me, it's so funny to have Kathy Griffin, like iconic, you know, 63-year-old celebrity, you know, yelling at us to vote blue no matter who. And to me, I was like, our audience is with us. They will also find it really funny.
It's journalism, kind of like you're giving her, you're interviewing her, the, you know, letting her hang herself or whatever. Like,
yes.
that's like the, you know, if you were the New York Times, you would publish that as well. But unfortunately, you're the victims of homophobia.
Exactly.
And you just aren't given like allowed the same standards.
I mean, and I really,
it's true.
George, I think it's so beautiful that you respected our audience that much. I was like, this is a little bit too high level of a joke.
You just don't want to. Yeah, you just like don't want to deal with it. Okay, I mean, I get it. And listen.
But also, what do you expect from her? Didn't she do that? What was the weird thing she did with like the Trump head that she was wearing? Like what?
But that's what. So that was a big part of it. Is she was saying like, you know, she did this photo shoot where she was holding Trump's head. And because of that, she lost like basically 6 years of work. She was like put on government lists. I mean, she was explaining all of this to us. And okay, yes, I understand that if with no context, you're like, why is this lady, you know, yelling at my two favorite podcasters? But I don't know. I was like, how fun. Like she was in the center of everything. She literally couldn't work for 6 years because of a photo shoot she did where she held Trump's bloody head. Like that is funny.
I knew. I mean, you can just, I, you know, Lauren, sometimes I have toxic levels of empathy, and I could just feel our listeners listening to it. Like, when I was listening to it, I was like, they're going to be mad at this. And it was like, I was hoping I was wrong, and I was hoping that George's Joker level humor would shine through. But I just, so we've sort of been dealing with people being like so mad at us for like the last 2 weeks in a way that's it's like so. I'm struggling with it.
But don't you feel like it's a bit fake? It's they're going through the motions a bit. I do feel like in the last couple of months, there has been a resurgence of people trying to make Twitter politics happen again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they're like, look, we're really mad. This is going to destroy our society. And like, I'm going to yell at you and I'm going to cyberbully you. And it's kind of like, it's a little bit sweet. No,
like, no, I know what you mean. There is something about it that,
they lack a new impetus for like talk, like being in public. And so they're like latching on to like 2020, whatever stupid
this
stuff.
Is exactly it. Talk about Taylor Swift fall out of a coconut tree. The yelling, I'm sort of like, we did this and we like saw how stupid we all looked, and we've like fully unpacked how silly that like we all looked.
No, and it's really like, true. When I think about,
so
yeah,
confusing.
They were trying to cancel me for being a bad writer. I didn't even
see Lauren.
They were trying to cancel.
Listen, you brought it up, not us.
What happened?
I know, but I'm just like, I've had you. Everybody online was going insane about Lauren.
Well, you know, Lauren, they called you the Renata Adler of looking at your phone a lot.
That's not even bad.
I don't think that's bad.
A novel about looking at your phone. Obviously.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to be.
Why would, that's literally like everyone looks at their phone a lot. What? I mean, I guess, would you rather be the Elizabeth Hardwick of, I don't know, writing listicles for BuzzFeed.com? I don't know. It's sort of.
It's not. I'm like, you guys are making, like, I don't know. It was really like people were trying to bring us back to 2016.
Yeah. Well, and, like, but, you know, it's of course, there's a certain beauty to it, of course, because, you know, as a longtime reader of yours, you were one of the voices that was publishing sort of similar pieces at that time.
But
is there a part of you that's like
a math error in one of my pieces, George?
What is the math error?
I believe there was an arithmetic error in the Book Forum article about me, among other fact-checking foibles that they had there.
That is interesting. Okay.
No, yeah, of course, obviously. But also, that I guess my feeling is like, oh, I wish I'd had my period of unearned unanimous praise and like money.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, when I did it, I was like, this person is really famous.
I see what you're saying.
Really,
I see what you're saying.
And they had never had a negative review. I'm like, I have been getting this internet.
Okay.
I'm like, you guys act like you're making me feel bad. I've been doing this since I was 24 years old. I wrote a takedown of Roxane Gay. Do you think you're going to make me like upset?
So,
do you know what I mean?
Okay, so Lauren, in your ideal world, I feel like, so do you think you should have this book that you just published, No Judgment, okay, you think this should have had sort of all positive reviews so that then someone, a spunky young 24-year-old writer could come, you know, for your next book and really take you down?
That would be, I mean, good for them. Yeah. I think that it should have been that way? I don't know. I don't like to engage in counterfactuals.
Okay.
But my feeling is like, this again? You like Google
it. I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like Google it. Of course, I'm not like upset about it. Like, do whatever you want.
Yeah, no, you don't seem upset at all.
It's funny.
Speaking of our backlash era.
Speaking of our backlash era.
Should we get into our topic?
Let's get into our topic, because talk about something that's going to have a backlash.
I mean, I really feel like we are, like, to be completely
we're being
honest,
a little Reputation era right now, I think.
It's so Reputation era in a way that I'm not sure. I mean, don't get me wrong. I hope we have a delicate on this episode.
Yes.
But the backlash era, I'm not emotionally good at dealing with it. Like, I get very obsessed with, like,
with what people are saying about you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it, like, is not chill. And but maybe this is exposure therapy. And I hope my Reputation era is strong and, you know, talking about Taylor Swift and now our topic, I'm sure I've got to get my armor on, girls. I've got to be stronger than ever before.
Yeah. I think
I'm
it's
so
important
excited to hear your opinions about this.
Yeah, I think it's important to not, we can't suddenly like for the rest of time only be talking about things we, you know, read online. But I think it's okay to be like, this is a contained, you know, for this episode and this conversation, we want to really just like, here's what happened, here's how we feel, and then we can move on.
Perfect.
So anyway, Lauren, what is the straight topic you've brought with you today, and what do you think makes it straight?
I have brought with me several boyfriends because we are talking about polyamory.
Wow.
Now, it's a bit contentious to say this is straight. Obviously, the queers, as they might say in Boston, the location of the most recent polyamory narrative that we were treated to on the internet,
yes,
would say the queers pioneered this practice as a response to various oppressive forces in our society. But like all things that you guys pioneer, we take them and ruin them. So that's what we're talking about today.
Wow.
And why is it straight?
Yeah.
Because a bunch of dorks have made it an identity on the internet in order to score points.
I see.
And
so it's become like a competitive, it's become something that like forcibly makes you interesting when not much else is there, let's say.
Yes. And I think too, the sort of discourse polyamory that I think we're going to discuss is very managerial.
No, okay, wait. I do agree that it's managerial. I mean, again, the most sort of like, I think the most compelling argument against this, the kind of 2024 straight coded polyamory that we read about in the pages of the New York Times and the Atlantic, is that it is like people that are, it's this way to basically like put romantic love into spreadsheets and live with eight people and have like schedules of when you are in bed with whom.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of, yeah.
Well, I also think, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, please.
I also think there is a way that it is trying to put like the normal emotions of monogamy. So, you know, you want to cheat on your husband of 15 years. It's a sort of logic based, it's like a logic and reason based calculus about how you're going to live your romantic life, right? So, you know, you're not going to, it's true. You're not going to sleep with the same person for the rest of your life that you met when you were 27. If we may use like a sort of straight timeline, you're just not going to do that. But I think in the last 10 or 15 years, there has been a real emphasis on being a good person. You know, you can't, you know, anti-red flag, living healthy, like manifesting your best life kind of thing, which means you can't have an affair, right? Mm-hmm. You can't dump your husband because you need to be living with your husband forever. So you have to sort of do this kind of rules-based thing ethically, anem or whatever. And then you just keep legislating is my experience and understanding, like that you just keep a new situation arises and then you must create more rules, and then a new situation arises and you must create more rules because there is the resistance.
So it's a less intuitive, it's a less like intuitive embodied existence, and it's a more like we are calling meetings to modify the Bill of Rights every 2 days or whatever, and we're having house meetings and it is by consensus and we are voting. It's basically what if relationships were voting.
What if relationships were voting? We're having a caucus.
We're having a caucus, yes.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Get it?
No joke formulation necessary.
No,
that one
good.
Was ready to go. Lauren, so you said bringing multiple boyfriends to the conversation. Do you participate in polyamory or are just a viewer?
I resist the terms and I don't... I talk about it now. I guess I do talk about it. If the man I am dating tries to use a term, I throw a fit and, and reject it immediately. But I am in an open relationship.
Yes.
If you have read some of my work, this would not be a surprise to you.
Well, I did want to ask, you know, and thank you for teeing me right up for it. I remember I first thought, okay, we got to get her on. Years, or not years, but months before your book, your latest book was released, when I read your essay in Harper's about going on the Goop cruise, which was an incredibly fun read. And you sort of offhandedly were like, well, I had two boyfriends. One was straight and one was gay. So obviously I'm going to bring the gay boyfriend to the cruise because he has a sense of irony, which, first of all, perfect, you know, perfect way to put that. But also sort of an iconic thing to mention and then never go back to, just a straight woman being like, anyway, so my gay boyfriend has a sense of irony, so I'm going to bring him to the Goop cruise. Is everyone on board? Great. So basically we get there and it is random sauce. So I want to know, sort of, I mean, I do think it's funny that, I don't know, like, I think the idea is that we're supposed to be like, Lauren is known for her literary takedowns, when in fact, you should be known for calling your boyfriend gay on the cover story for Harper's.
Wait, but I wasn't calling him gay. He's gay. He's gay. He's probably still gay. like we were saying earlier, I don't shy away from getting into a little bit of a scrape.
Of course.
And I don't know if we've mentioned this, but I live in Berlin, the hotbed of sexual freedom. And
I thought that was Boston.
Boston. Now it is. Yeah. This was, you know, this was a couple years ago. We sort of paved the way for the Boston polycule that was featured in the New York Times week. I think that in Berlin, especially in sort of expat, like writer, artist, academic, intellectual party people milieu that I am a part of, the queer politics sort of did there was like no more queer to go, right? So they had the gay guys in particular sort of had to turn around because they reached the end of the line and they're like, what else can we do?
This is literally perfect. Yeah. Sam and I talk about this all the time that there's like, people are so liberated, and specifically gay guys are so liberated, that really the only other way to go is to go full horseshoe theory and date a woman. And we were saying in a previous episode, the most radical thing for us to do, and I'm not even talking about like a woman, maybe a sort of more masculine presenting woman or someone who is gender nonconforming. I think the most radical thing Sam and I could do was date Sydney Sweeney. Like, it just go truly like date like the most porny, like straight man's fantasy of what a woman is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's honestly really inspiring that that's already happening in Berlin.
What'd you say? I'm on the level of Sydney Sweeney. Thanks very much.
I think you look,
of course.
Well, as we've already discussed, you're more of a Taylor Swift, but I think you're certainly on the spectrum.
No, when I was doing this, a couple of my friends were like, but Lauren, you're queer. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they were like, you wear baggy pants. And I was like, what do you mean I wear baggy pants? And they were like, you wear baggy pants. You have two boyfriends. Your boyfriend's gay. I was like, maybe you could say I'm in a queer relationship.
I see.
But I'm not going to go around saying I'm a queer woman, which means something else. And I'm obviously not. And if a man had two girlfriends, you would not call him queer. You would be like, yeah, that guy's doing a great job.
Well, he might call himself queer.
Yeah, but these days. yeah, my former gay boyfriend did not fall out of the coconut tree. He is a part of the context of everything that came before him. So, you know, this is kind of like, I'm not aware that this is happening, but I have since done some sociological investigations. And indeed, like, I was like in a spin class and I like met a friend of a friend, and this guy was sort of like talking to me about something. And I said, oh, you know, like I had this gay boyfriend. And he was like, I'm a gay guy and I have a girlfriend. And I was like, what? What? I've never met another one. So it was sort of common. And I think if we can be serious for a moment, the gay, I don't know how it describe this. Let's say the gay sex culture in Berlin is somewhat abusive and alienating, is my understanding. And I think many people have figured out ways to deal with that basically
by dating, like, by dating women.
By being like, there's no boyfriend for me here. They're all horrible and like beat me up.
I see.
Yeah. And you know, historically, the relationship between straight women and gay men has been quite strong.
Sure.
And
of course.
Now, if you have a sort of open sex culture where you can, like, you know, nobody's like expecting you to do missionary or whatever, like you can do also, you know, it's not so unusual or strange, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. You know what you're describing is it's like a sort of a woman that has always identified as straight, later in life being like, you know what, men suck. And then she starts dating a woman. Yeah. You're describing that, but for a gay guy, which I think is so new and radical. Like a gay guy literally being like, oh, ladies, men suck. And then go and then going and dating a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And the ladies are like, they do suck. And you can kind of like bond about that in a way that is initially quite exciting. And then you realize, like, oh, you're also a man, though. which side are you on? And so it does have, let's say, radical potential, or it feels that way, and not unprecedented. But it's interesting. But the reason I did it, you know. Anyway, the craft portion of this conversation is like, yeah, I dropped that information in because it's not super relevant to the ostensible topic of my piece, but it was the funniest way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So I have a question in terms of the straightness of polyamory. Like, do we feel like if there are two, broadly speaking, two types of polyamory that are represented in the media, I would say one of them is a sort of like democratized polycule, and the other one is like, I'm in an open relationship with a primary partner and I am, quote unquote, allowed to have other flings. Mm-hmm. Which of those would you say is straighter, and which of them would you say is gayer?
The polycule is straighter, and the open relationship with flings is gayer, for sure.
I agree. Even though, in theory, you would think that the polycule was more queer because it's so communal and it's so, like, Copenhagen.
Yeah, but it's all, like, I don't really want to be around, like, someone, like, annoying people that you're going out with for some reason, you know?
Yeah, because what it is, you're not actually in a commune, you're in a startup. Like, you are, you are in a WeWork and you are sharing a shared desk. You are in a pod with other people that are on their MacBooks.
Yeah, and the group chat thing and the shared calendar and the weird denial of reality. I don't think, like, denying reality is particularly gay, right? Like, I think I don't know.
Sure.
I think, like,
no, this is an interesting point, because
I don't really know if this is true, but I think this is a fruitful topic of conversation.
Yeah. Is denying, this is actually a great,
well,
okay,
I think
this is a great
obviously
question.
A rich tradition for queer people to deny reality.
Yes.
Like, that is like, I'm living my fantasy, blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm not rich, but I feel rich, and that's enough. And,
yes.
You know,
also
whatever.
Just the idea of performance, like the idea that we are at all times performing, the idea that all the world's a stage. All of that is very much like denying basic reality.
Yeah, famous LGBTQ icon Shakespeare said that.
Exactly.
But is it not creating reality? I don't understand this distinction between the performance and reality. I don't think that there is necessarily a legitimate distinction, right? Like, if you spend half your time performing, that's who you are. Mm-hmm. That's your life.
And of course, that's the real meaning of performativity, is that for something to be a performance doesn't mean that it's fake. It just means that it is being performed and thus being made.
Yes. But I don't think that the straight polycule, sorry, they would be a queer polycule, because I assume some queer relationships happening in there, that is not performing. And maybe it's just that the performance is bad.
You're in a black box theater.
Yeah.
It's your friend's friend. You're going in there to support. And at the end, you're like, well, you know, they work together really well.
Yeah. And you're like,
well, it's that thing where it's like
living their dream, you know?
It took a lot of emails to get here. Like, you have to admit, this was like, many people were called in, and organizationally, this was difficult. Other than that, is it inspired? I'm not sure.
Yeah. And I think that, okay, so then I think if we're going back to denying reality, I think if you were to argue that denying reality is straight, and not to get political, but like the idea of straight denial of reality is sort of like denying, for example, denying that inequality exists, denying that there are problems in the world and going about your day. That is a straight version of denying reality. It's not like putting on a fun outfit. It's being like, I'm composting.
Yeah, well, now I guess you could sort of, let's historicize this. So you could say that straight monogamy was denying reality, like this fake like idea that you were gonna like possess each other for all time and you would never step out or whatever. You would never want, to the extent that it would ruin your life, to do something besides monogamy. Now they've sort of pendulum swing too far in the other direction, which is like, I'm gonna deny the fact that this is deeply weird and fucked up, that I'm in an 8-person polycule and I hate these people, and I watch my like primary partner who I'm in love with like have sex with some other person, and they text me afterwards and they're like, LOL, got cream pie, or whatever they do, and like it's like cutesy stupid porn, like desexualized porn language that they use. And it's also sort of denying reality because they're like, I went to therapy for several, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I'm really happy for her, actually. And I think among many poly people, there is a sort of like, they feel distraught that they're jealous, or they're distraught that they have like, they don't like that their primary partner is falling in love with someone else. Yeah. And they're like, I need to get rid of this because it isn't enlightened. It isn't, you know, it's like patriarchal or whatever, like blah, 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 blah. And you're like, no, that's a very obviously that's how you feel. And that doesn't mean you need to act on it such that you like ruin your life, but like you shouldn't deny the fact that you're obviously jealous about that, right?
Yeah. So maybe what like compulsory heteromonogamy and, you know, hedonistic queer polycules have in common is that they aspire to this sort of like simplified happiness. Like it's like in the same way that you watch, you know, Far From Heaven or something, and it is this like 50s version of a happy household and everyone has to conform. In a weird like funhouse mirror way, the polycule article is people every day waking up and looking in the mirror and being like, I'm happy, I'm happy, I'm happy. Like, this is exactly, I finally found a way to be happy. And maybe the way out of both of those things is to sort of like accept that at any given time you can feel a variety of feelings, and you can feel jealousy and you can feel bitterness. And that is all part of a healthy relationship.
Yeah. And you do, is it healthy to discuss it all? Like we can,
this
you
is an interesting
point,
question.
And then we can talk about the processing element, which does also come from like queer, like Berkeley culture. But
yes.
Sam was going to make a point first.
Well, I guess I was going to ask a different question. George, you made the joke earlier about like, it's very tech startup, but honestly, and maybe it's just geographic, there is a link between straight poly and people that work in tech.
Yes.
And like,
totally.
I want to understand why.
Well, it's Burning Man. It's literally
Burning Man.
It's like, it's you know, sort of like commodified club culture, commodified like back to nature ideology. It is like Whole Earth Catalog. It is, you know,
it's also sort of like efficiency culture too. It's like being like, I can do this perfectly. Like all of my wants can be met, and they can be met on time, and like, and I'll reach like a higher plane of productivity.
Yes,
yeah, and I'll get all of the bad, unproductive emotions out by like working through this. But it's also about an investment mindset, which is like, if I can only get over these hangups I have, then I will achieve a sexual, emotional nirvana, and I can continue to be productive, like in my like work life, or I can retire early, because they also want to retire early and become millionaires, right? Yeah. So we can retire early in our poly house and blah 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 blah.
I've got it. Okay, this is the reality thing. You're not trying to ignore reality. You're trying to escape reality. You think there's a way to get out if you can just do everything right. But the truth is there's no escaping. And so it's better to like, yeah, get used to feeling jealous, get used to being late, get used to being unproductive some days and productive other days.
I mean, are we being so like, pull yourself up from by your bootstraps? Like, I'm like, are we now suddenly being conservative and telling people they're not allowed to imagine new ways of being with one another?
I just mean, I don't even mean don't be poly. I mean, like, don't be poly as an escape from like what is
reality. Like, don't be poly as an escape from unproductivity or lack of, or don't be poly as a escape of jealousy and whatever.
Yeah, what it means to like be a human in the world. Like, you can't like hack your way out of it. But can I ask you guys, what are your orientations? You're gay.
We're both in open relationships.
We're openistas.
We're both in, I would say, long-term open relationships.
But it's, yeah. And like the question of like a third, you know, is sort of like, I feel like there's so many gay couples that like start open and whatever. And then like suddenly it's like, and that's our boyfriend. And I'm sort of like, yeah, go off, queen. There's a difference too, where it's not like, and I am poly and I have been, and it's just sort of like, there's a like, yeah, we are dating and now we're dating him too. And in a way that I appreciate, which is like the casualness, and maybe like queer people, maybe that's a privilege of being gay, is that you get to be more casual about it. Whereas if you're like straight, you don't get to.
I do think that's a big part of it, is like, and it sort of sucks that for the poly New York Times people, that they become these punchlines, when in fact they are just trying to have a certain level of freedom that perhaps if you are already queer, and if you are already embedded in communities where like different romantic practices are at play, you don't feel the need to constantly justify your actions and put them in a sort of moral framework.
And I think too, with poly stuff in particular, there is a kind of evangelical approach or an evangelical impulse that these people have, because especially poly stuff, you need more people to do it so that you can fuck more people, right? Like, it's actually it's an MLM. So you need people to participate in it, because first of all, you don't want people to be like, you're a freak, get away from me. And also you don't want people to, you know, you want more people who are like kind of interested in it so that you can like have relationships with them in the way that you want to, because it can be alienating. I don't find it particularly alienating. I was just going to make a joke, which is that if you were to, as two gay guys, pick up a third who was a woman, I do believe it would not be casual, and you would indeed have all sorts of issues from experience talking about it.
Yeah.
But there is also another part of it that is interesting to me, which is the talking and the intimacy that creates. And I think maybe some of it is about like wanting more intimacy, wanting to know people deeper, and wanting to know about your partner things that would ordinarily be kept private, right? So if I have like a really huge crush on somebody, and then I talk to my boyfriend about it, which is not to say I do that, I don't really do that, but if I do that, then he kind of like has won over on the crush, because he, you know, we have a relationship, and he sort of talks to me about things that I can't talk to that guy about. So, so the talking element, I think, is sort of underrepresented in the like, let's like make fun of the poly people online. Cause I agree with you guys, like there is something beautiful about it, or like interesting about it.
Totally. The crush thing is really fascinating, because this really struck me when I was watching Couples Therapy, that show with Orna.
I love that show.
I mean, of course. So there is a couple, and one of them says, you know, I told her I have a new crush. And the complaint was that her girlfriend was not sort of excited enough about her new crush. Like, it's like everything needs to be affirmed so much that I am telling my boyfriend I have a new crush. And not only do I expect him to, you know, sort of be okay with that conversation, quote unquote, but I also want him to affirm it and yes and it and be like, oh my God, I'm so proud of you. That must be so exciting that you have a new crush. Tell me about it and we'll talk about it together.
I feel like it's not me. I'm like, if my boyfriend is like, yeah, I think that guy's great, you should go out with him, I'm like, don't say that.
Yeah.
You don't know. You should watch out for that guy. You don't know. You know what I mean? I'm like, there's a certain amount of the open relationship, which is like, I want to maintain some part of myself, and I want to like be my own person, and I want my freedom. And I don't want you to participate in it, like quit stealing my stuff.
That's a really good point. It's almost like, you know, the point of an open relationship, I guess, would be, or part of the point would be to be more free. But then if you are discussing every little thing with your partner, then in fact, it's almost like you are even more tied in a sort of heteropatriarchal way. You're even more tied to your primary partner, and you like are losing a sense of like independence and privacy rather than gaining.
Yeah, and it creates all these like other, I don't know, I'm a sort of like neurotic, anxious person. And like, I'm like, what, you know, when do I have to tell you that I'm going on a date? Like, do I have to tell you now? Like, should I disclose this text message? Like, it creates all this like bullshit that you think about where you're like, this was supposed to be fun. Like, this was supposed to be not liberated, but like free. Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
Like, it was supposed to be easier. And now it's because of this impetus to validate everyone's feelings as opposed to an impetus to like deal with your own feelings on your own time.
Yeah.
It creates like more stress in some ways.
I mean, yeah, every relationship you do need like some privacy. Like you need a little bit of privacy in the relationship, and it's weird to think that you don't. I'm like obsessed with having a little bit of space to myself, and like, you know, honey, I like to perform a bit. And so if you're seeing me at my worst all the time, like if you see me at 3 p.m. every Tuesday when I'm miserable, then you're not going to find me very hot. So I'm like, don't look at me now. Like, let me be private and let me be cranky. And then, you know, Friday night, you can see me in all my wonder and glory.
That's right. You know what I think actually would really help the situation is if Taylor Swift joined a polycule for approximately 6 months and then wrote an album about that.
Yes. That's really good.
That's really good.
Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah, I really do think that's the last frontier.
I mean, in our previously mentioned Backlash episode with Kathy Griffin, we actually told Kathy Griffin that in trying to pivot to a joke, we told Kathy Griffin that Taylor Swift should be in a polycule with Joe and Jill Biden. And I feel that she was just sort of like, what?
So you didn't get it? Wait, Kathy Griffin didn't respond to that?
Well, this is part of our many efforts. And I just want to make it clear, we adore Kathy Griffin.
Adore
we are
her.
So honored she came on. And I genuinely have so much respect for her as a comic. But it was just very funny that we kept trying to pivot. When she would say, like, you know, go into the vote blue no matter who stuff, we would just try to very kindly pivot to a joke. And so she was like, you know, I think Taylor Swift, if she endorsed Joe Biden, that would really like help us out. And we were like, you know, it would be really funny if she was in a thruple with Joe Biden and Jill Biden.
But she didn't find that funny.
I think she got it.
But I also think she felt that it was a joke and was sort of like, well, I'm not kidding. And it was sort of like, right.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel like the poly discussion is like so, you know, in my radical empathy complex, because I am like, I do feel like for the, you know, quote unquote, like heterosexual people that are in poly situations, I could see why they'd want to like, you know, defend it and be, and like have people have respect for it because it's so maligned, but in their community. But it is, there's a self-seriousness to it that's unfortunately going to be a little laughable sometimes.
Of course. And also, guess what? Like the people that, it's also a self-selecting group of people that agree to be in a New York Times feature. I think there are probably, you know, there are people living in polycules that are just like, honestly reading that article and being like, oh God, they're making us look bad. It's like when I, you know, turn on my TV and see all these gay guys. No, I'm kidding.
But no, I don't know.
You know, it's a self-selecting group.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know though. I suggest polyamory for the topic, but I was like, you know, we could do more niche and do field. Which straight people also love.
Field is a really tough one. Yeah.
Field, the sex app for smart people.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know. I do find that a lot of the people on it, I don't really use it anymore, but like when you look at it, it's a lot of branding. Like it's a lot of like self-branding as like what kind of poly you are and the sort of like lower and low, sort of subgenre of poly that you can be.
Wow.
And like what are your weird rules and stuff. And I don't know. It's just the like
That was what was embarrassing about the New York Times article, too, was all the self-branding of, like, he is jock football player, but I am witch crystal lady.
I know. Do people really want to be like that? Like, do they really want to be, like, trapped in that?
I think about this all the time.
People are looking for meaning, and nothing, everything is so uncertain and nebulous that I do think there's a comfort you can take in being like, I am cheerleader.
But where doesn't meaning come from the constantly cycling uncertainty and the way that you respond? Meaning is not fixed. I don't know. What do you mean?
I feel there's so, I get, I mean, people just want to have control. I think more than meaning. I think people want to have control. And that's like it's sort of like knowing like what your favorite movie is. Like, it's like, people like to be like, I know what my favorite movie is, therefore I know who I am. And it's like,
It's also just like identity is so complex that it's so much easier, rather than finding out fundamentally what kind of person you are or something, it's easier to be like, I am a Gryffindor.
Should we do our final segment?
Yeah. Lauren, any final thoughts on polyamory?
Oh, I don't have any final thoughts. It's not bad or good. I think I will say, you know, we're like judgy. But even though we all sort of do it in some way. The thing that I judge people for is being an obviously doomed monogamous relationship.
Yes, totally.
That's what and sort of being like, I just can't do it. This is the way that I am. And it's like, no, you're not. And there is something like really like moving and nice about the people who are like, I'm going to do this differently, even if they do a bad job of it, right?
I completely agree. And I think I don't want anyone to take away from this that we are, I don't know, passing moral judgment on people who are in polycules. If anything, it's sort of like
judgment.
Passing aesthetic judgment, exactly.
There needs to be a different word for it, because it's not that I'm like opposed to, it's like a type of person. It's almost like how like there's like people who smoke weed and then there's stoner culture. Like, like it's like, it's not that I care. Like I'm down for different relationship styles. It's just like, be normal about it. Be chill.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's literally how I feel about Taylor Swift.
Literally.
I was going to say, it's just how you guys feel about Taylor Swift. It's the same. They're not hurting you.
Yeah.
It's fine if they do that. But if any of them wanted to get woken up and come over and like listen to Lana Del Rey, like you would welcome them. You would help them, right?
Welcome with open arms.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Stadtsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Our final segment is called Shoutouts. And in this segment, we do pay homage to the grand straight tradition of the radio shoutout and just shout out to anything that we are enjoying at all. So imagine it's 2001, you're at TRL shouting out to your squad back home, but about anything that you are currently enjoying. George, off the top of your head, do you have one?
So, part of this, part of this tradition is that we think of them on the spot, just like we would if we were put on the spot on the radio. I can do one. It's not going to be super entertaining, but it is going to be earnest and something I genuinely recommend. Okay. So I can go.
Go for it.
Okay. All right. What's up, freaks and losers out there? I want to give a shout out to my friend, David's Substack. It's called thearcades.substack.com. Now, okay, here's the thing. This is not one of the, he's not some journalist railing about cancel culture. I'll tell you that. It is a Substack where each week you get a curated list of things that are on auction. I'm talking furniture, design items, whatever, that he has looked through and curated for you. And I have found some of them. I mean, we're talking a giant glass table with huge legs. We are talking a sort of like, I'm looking at it now, silver leaf shelf brackets that are currently going for it. Nope, that link is broken. And we are talking about, there was one time a life size sort of sculptural like set piece of Sigourney Weaver from the Alien movie that they were like getting rid of in some sort of like on set items auction that they were doing or whatever. And so this is a big part of his life. So he looks at auctions a lot. And, you know, rather than seeing all the cacophony of all the different live auctioneers and all those websites, you just get one email a week and it shows you truly some of the most there's a sculpture of a banana, and when it's peeled, it looks like a vulva inside. And that is made of, I think, like pure. Hold on, let me find it. All right. It's ivory. So you can't import it. So it is an ivory banana sculpture that has sort of flies that are colored around it, and then it is open, and then you get a sort of vaginal inside. Anyway, thearcades.substack.com.
So you're looking for a girlfriend, is what we're hearing.
Yeah. I'm really drawn to this vaginal sculpture.
Vaginal sculpture, I don't know.
That was beautiful.
All right, Sam.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. What is up, thoughtful thinkers around the globe? I would like to give a shout out to the new Chapel Rowan song, Good Luck Babe. So, and this is a mixed, complicated conversation because we are at a point where Chapel Rowan is reaching a larger stage. She is growing rapidly. And, you know, I've been saying, I love her. This new song is incredible. And I'm saying, okay, now I'm getting a little bit scared. We are at sort of what I call Lizzo's pass, where she can either go in a cool direction and be cool forever, or in a not cool direction and be a shameful part of my past that I was a stan. And so I am just so curious. Right now, all signs point to the right direction and she will be cool forever. But I have been proven wrong many times before, and I love watching someone rise. I love, right now I'm obsessed with her, and I keep expecting to enter my own backlash era, and it just keeps not happening. You want someone to be a fluke, and then you're like, no, she's really got the goods. And so Chapel, I say shout out to you. You've got the goods. Good Luck Babe is such a hit, and you're at Lizzo's pass. Make the right choice. It's left or right, and you have all the power to make the right choice. I love you, baby. Woo!
Wow. Lizzo's pass, that's going to be big.
It's really good.
I mean, there was a point. I mean, people forget Lizzo was once the George, the pied a terre of Brooklyn.
So I want to
where it was
Lauren. The
wait, Lizzo was.
So Lauren, the context there is that I met a guy that was trying to say creme de la creme and accidentally said pied a terre, and so now whenever something is sort of the creme de la creme of something, we say it's the pied a terre of something.
It makes sense. Yeah, good.
But yeah, there was a point where Lizzo was like. Everyone was like, she's so cool, she's so amazing, she's awesome. Like the mean gay guys that like live in New York.
Yes. I mean, she was like cool, and she was endorsed by Prince, and she was from Minnesota and like played the flute.
And she was playing the flute, and then she abused her employees.
That's right.
Yeah. Lizzo's pass.
Lizzo's pass. All right.
Okay. All right, Lauren.
Should I? What's up, haters?
Yes.
What's up, haters? I was going to do some object, but you guys both recommended things from culture. So I'm also going to mention, shout out an artist. I purchased a risograph print from this this week. Her name is Moira Barrett. I was walking down the street living my local community lifestyle here in Berlin, and I went into a gallery and I saw this great print show featuring works by Moira Barrett, and I bought a print from her, and it is a picture of a sort of a nameplate on an apartment building with little buttons. And what I like about this print that I bought is it could have gone terribly wrong. It could have been really twee, but she is incisive enough and smart enough to have labeled these nameplates in a funny way. And I am going to read the nameplates that you can theoretically buzz in this picture. Okay.
Perfect.
So it's a just to summarize again, it is an apartment nameplate with a buzzer. So you can buzz indulgent father figure, congenital naysayer, plain spoken peer, self-effacing acolyte, unbothered enabler, or clairvoyant confidant. Like I said, wow. it could have been twee and stupid, but it's actually pretty smart. So shout out to Moira. Great work. I'm very happy and I'm excited to frame this and put it on my wall.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, I'll tell you one thing. You won't find that on Wikipedia. So eat dick, Book Forum.
No, we love Book Forum. It's a very
no, we love Book Forum.
Magazine.
I actually,
we here at Stradio Lab love Book Forum.
I wrote many
I actually
articles
do
for Book
love,
Forum back in
yes,
my day.
I love Book Forum, and they're still getting lips a flapping all these years later. So welcome back.
Welcome back. I love being a tri-coastal Book Forum based podcast.
Me too. And we'll see you in Berlin. By the way, last question, Lauren, Germany, gay or straight?
Oh, it's deeply closeted, surely.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, sounds hot to me. I'm coming.
All right. Yeah. Lauren, thanks so much for doing the pod.
Thank you, guys.
Lauren's new book is called No Judgment. Lauren's novel is called Fake Accounts. Anything else you would like to promote? Any upcoming television or film projects?
No more projects. We're in repose currently.
Okay, oh, cool.
Yes. We're in training. Let's say.
Beautiful. All right. Well,
beautiful.
Thanks for doing the pod.
All right. Thanks for doing the pod.
Bye.
Podcast ends now. Want more? Subscribe to our Patreon for 2 extra episodes a month, Discord access, and more by heading to patreon.com/Stradiolab.
And for all our visual learners, free full-length video episodes are available on our YouTube.
Now get back to work.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.